Members of the Wisconsin National Guard will be able to carry weapons while on duty under an executive order by Governor Scott Walker. He has also called for changing federal law to allow military members to be armed at recruiting centers. The moves come after a deadly attack on Marines in Chattanooga, Tennessee last week. And we will talk with our two guests during today's Big Question as to whether or not the National Guard and other military members should be permitted to carry weapons while on duty. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 22nd. This will be the first of two Big Questions during this hour. We will also talk about a second Big Question after 7:30. Governor Walker has said that if elected president, he will undo the nuclear deal with Iran on his very first day in office. And we will ask you if you think that's a good idea or not after 7:30. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You can also vote in our online polls, which we have linked to our Facebook page, and you can also find at wpr.org/joy. Let me welcome our two guests. Kevin Hermaning is with us. Kevin is a financial planner from Wausau, a conservative political activist. He was also one of the 52 Americans held hostage in Iran 35 years ago, and he is one of our regular guests on our Week in Review. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy, and thank you for the opportunity to join you today.
Thank you for joining us. We also are joined by Amitabh Paul, managing editor for The Progressive Magazine, author of Islam Means Peace, Understanding the Muslim Principle of Nonviolence Today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us for the first time. Let's start with you, Amitabh. What's your opening statement in our Big Question debate? Is Governor Walker right or wrong to allow Wisconsin National Guard members to carry weapons while on duty, and why?
Well, Joy, let me sort of, you know, just give some context. You know, this is a knee-jerk policy measure in reaction to this horrible act perpetrated by this person, Mohammed Abdulaziz, who was mentally disturbed, who was abusing drugs and alcohol. Political or sort of, you know, social religious motivation had an extremely minor part, if at all. And in response to this one act, you know, to sort of go about sort of, you know, engaging in this problematic reaction, I think is unjustified. I'm not the only one who's raising questions. Serving and retired military personnel think it's a bad idea. How will it be implemented? And, you know, it may actually, I mean, for example, at Fort Hood, there was this serving sort of military personnel who actually perpetrated this act some years ago. How do you deal with that, for example? The storing of weapons, the training of all these people on bases. I mean, there's so many questions raised and that haven't been answered. And so I think this is definitely a bad idea.
Kevin, in your opening statement, how do you feel about arming of the National Guard?
Well, it's interesting. Literally within about an hour of when I heard about this incident last week, I shared with my wife that I was wondering forever why on earth we do not allow our active duty nor our active reservists all across the United States to carry weapons. They're well-trained. It is true they're not trained in ordinary police action. They're not trained to serve in that capacity, but certainly they can be trained if we can provide training for concealed carry opportunities, if we can provide training for people who have no military training to be able to carry weapons, why wouldn't we allow people who already have the training through boot camp and officers' basic school and the like to be able to carry weapons and to protect not only themselves, not only against people who may or may not have exposure to radicalization such as the Fort Hood shooter Nadal Hassan and others, or even just people who, as Mr. Paul is suggesting, were merely mentally ill, why wouldn't they be able to protect themselves and other people in their communities? To me, it makes perfect sense. I don't know why it hasn't been the policy of this country for literally decades.
Governor Walker also called for changing the federal law to allow military members to be armed at recruiting centers and domestic bases. And U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is planning on introducing legislation to allow just that. Do you think, Kevin, that had this been in effect last week, that the story in Chattanooga would have been different?
We don't know. Joy, we have no idea whether the Marines who were there at the recruiting station would have been prepared, whether one person would have lost their life, whether all five who ended up dying, four immediately, and then the Navy fellow a couple of days later in the hospital. We don't know whether it would have prevented it, but we certainly know that without them being armed, there was no chance that it could have been prevented. So at least there would have been an opportunity to end the crisis earlier. If you look at some of the incidents that have happened in college campuses, if you look at some of the incidents that have happened in shopping malls, not all perpetuated, so don't misunderstand, not all perpetuated by people of Mideast descent, by people who may or may not be radicalized, whether they're lone wolves or otherwise. We have no idea how many opportunities there could have been to protect additional lives, because there have been incidents where people who were armed were able to stop and put an end to potential even more loss of life, movie theaters and the like, over the last 25 years, that this has really been elevated to a much higher sense of media awareness.
Amitabh, what is the harm in arming our military members?
Well, Joy, I mean, you know, in real-life situations, things don't work out as planned. And, you know, let's take an actual example. 2 years ago, Aaron Alexis, who was a civilian contractor, affiliated with the Navy, opened fire, killing 12 people. I mean, you know, could that have been stopped? Maybe, maybe not. What would the rules of engagement have been? I mean, it's so complex. You know, you may end up shooting the wrong guy. People didn't know for a long time who was actually the perpetrator. I mean, these are complicated situations. And, you know, you actually may end up causing much more harm than good by having everybody armed on base. And as I said, you know, the Fort Hood example is one where, you know, do you sort of, you know, have everybody undergo an extensive sort of mental health check? I mean, there's so many questions raised, and it's so complicated, and these are sort of knee-jerk, bad answers, which may or may not work.
Yeah, so, Amitabh, if arming the military members is not the answer, what is?
Well, you know, there are other security measures that you can take and sort of, you know, and be cautious. I mean, the question is, and the question this country always has been, how to sort of, you know, find the balance between liberty and security, or openness and security. And I think we really have to sort of, you know, think real hard before implementing specific security measures. There can be less intrusive ones. There can be less sort of, you know, knee-jerk reactions that still can ensure the safety and security of these military bases and installations. Absolutely.
Yeah, some military leaders are saying we shouldn't rush to arm soldiers.
Absolutely.
Kevin, they say they're not so much worried about military members attacking each other, but accidental discharges and
absolutely.
And other...
Odierno said that, the chief of staff, absolutely.
Yeah, so Kevin, let's get Kevin to respond to that concern.
Well, of course it should be a concern. Is anybody surprised that if folks are handed weapons for which they are not given additional training, that there couldn't be some accidents? Absolutely. That's I mean, if we've got people who have additional training and they're trained on civilian tactics, they are trained on what to watch for, and frankly, what's wrong with that? Isn't that what our National Guard is all about, is to protect the U.S., not to go into a war combat situation, though we know that certainly tens of thousands of American National Guardsmen and women were sent into actual combat situations abroad. So they were given additional training on the other side. If we can provide concealed carry opportunities, if you look across the United States, typically the areas of the country which are what conservatives might view as no gun zones, they tend to be the most dangerous, most violent parts of our country. Chicago is a no-gun zone. Chicago has more murders than virtually any major city in the entire world. How safe are the people of Chicago who have been denied the opportunity to protect themselves from violence and thugs? And so, you know, people have tried to make this a Muslim issue. If we want to talk about it as that, I'm fine having that conversation, but it seems to me that if you can allow people who pass the tests, if they've had the screenings, if they have had no issues from a criminality standpoint, and they're allowed to get a concealed carry permit, why wouldn't you allow people of the armed services, which have already been vetted, who have already been vetted by the U.S. government, to go through military training? Why wouldn't you allow them to also to protect people on the homeland?
We'll talk more after the news. This is the Ideas Network. Wisconsin has become the seventh state to allow its National Guard members to carry weapons while on duty. Governor Walker issued the executive order yesterday, less than a week after a lone gunman opened fire on a military recruiting center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And we are asking in one of our big questions this hour, is this a good idea or not? Our two guests have different answers to the big question. Kevin Hermaning says, yes, it is a good idea. Amitabh Paul says, no, it is not. This is kind of a separate but somewhat related issue. After the Chattanooga shooting, retired General Wesley Clark said that Islamic extremists who are disloyal to the United States, like the Chattanooga shooter, should be placed in internment camps for the duration of the war on terror. Amitabh, what was your reaction to Wesley Clark's statement?
I am extremely distressed. You know, Wesley Clark was a Democratic presidential sort of candidate, in the running for the nomination in 2004. I actually saw him in Madison then. For him to sort of, you know, make such open-ended, broad, and sort of, you know, really disturbing statements that sort of infringe on basic rights, on free speech. I mean, you know, anybody who'd commit a crime would obviously be imprisoned for him. I mean, these are almost thought crimes. And is this code for sort of American Muslims in general? I mean, you know, it's hard to know because these were off-the-cuff remarks, not sort of, you know, well-thought-out policy positions. But still, it's extremely disturbing.
Yeah. And, Amitabh, do we know that the Chattanooga shooter was an extremist, an Islamic extremist?
Well, you know, as I said, you know, it was nearly completely due to sort of, you know, mental issues. He was quite possibly bipolar. He had a history of drug and alcohol abuse, which is not, to say the least, characteristic of a fundamentalist Muslim. He was searching for religious motivation and perhaps a political motivation, but that's different from being primarily motivated by fundamentalist Islamic ideology.
Yeah. So, Kevin, do you think that Clark's idea of internment camps is worth considering, or is he going too far?
Well, first of all, I don't think it was made off the cuff. He was in the midst of an interview, and he clearly was emotionally connected to the problems, the challenge of last week's shooting on whatever the day was last week in Chattanooga. I think that this is how the general feels. I happen to disagree with how the general is characterizing the solution to this. I think that one of our, you may, Joy, and we're probably going to talk about this in the next half an hour or so, or at a different time, you may recall the column that I penned to the Journal Sentinel 15 years ago after 9/11, in which I called for the deportation of people of Mideast descent who were without their visas. Their visas had expired. Students who no longer belonged here, illegal immigrants, illegal aliens who had come into this country in violation of every federal law as it relates to how people come into the U.S. And, of course, that was roundly criticized, and yet our country ended up doing it just a couple of months later after we decided to go into Afghanistan and Iraq. But I think this is the wrong solution. I think the solution is to be monitoring and viewing where these folks are getting the radicalization. I heard what Mr. Paul said, but I would direct him to this morning's Wall Street Journal, in which it is suggested, not by the journal editorial writers, which of course would be tending more toward the conservative side, I would imagine, but rather the fact that the people on the ground from the FBI are characterizing or are drawing conclusions already that Mohammed Abdulaziz, the now dead gunman, from Chattanooga, was actually radicalized by the teachings of Anwar al-Awlaki. And so the militant cleric is the one who has been kind of elevated to these positions all over YouTube, all over Twitter. I mean, these messages of, especially during Ramadan, and I believe that this incident occurred on the last day of Ramadan, if I'm not mistaken, ISIS has been pushing that message for the last how many months? And so, of course, you're going to get people... I think the idea that, well, he might have been bipolar or whatever, it's just an excuse. He's a radicalized Muslim who needed to be on the radar of our security forces. Governor Walker, we're going to probably talk about this in a moment, but Governor Walker talks about safety. There aren't a lot of Americans who feel safe anymore in our country. We could talk about national security. We talk about taking the war to the Muslims, the Islamic extremists over in the Mideast rather than our own borders. Yes, that's, I think, what we need to do. I think that's what the American people desire.
Well,
and we're not doing that.
Let's get Amitabh to respond to that.
Well, I mean, there's so many points that Kevin raises. I mean, you know, regarding Mohammed Abdulaziz, you know, he was, as I said, searching for a religious motivation. He may have gone to Awlaki's sermons. That doesn't necessarily mean that that was the primary reason he did it. As for carrying the war over to the Middle East, you know, we did it once under President Bush. Look what that's gotten us. It's gotten us ISIS. It's gotten us the destruction of large portions of the Middle East. The major portions of shootings in this country are carried out not by American Muslims, but by non-Muslims, by Caucasians. Again and again, studies have shown that. I mean, of course, there was the stark example in South Carolina recently. There's a huge imbalance in the number of killings and shootings carried out by Muslims versus non-Muslims to the ratio of 5-1, according to some studies. So we need to take a look at gun control. We need to take a look at broader measures rather than just specifically targeting American Muslims and placing them under suspicion.
All right. Let's... a caller just dropped that I was going to take as we move into closing arguments on this specific big question, wanting to say that isn't there laws in place to stop our military members from becoming essentially domestic police, saying that he thought this was a bad idea to arm our military members because of this. As we go into closing arguments, Kevin, what about that? Do we want to arm our military members so they are essentially police?
I think that it's a good idea to have our military members active duty and active reservists. I think personally I would draw the line at inactive reservists. I would. It doesn't mean that we couldn't look at that as well, but active reservists and people who are on active duty, I fail to understand the rationale as to why we wouldn't allow them to protect themselves, their installations, whether it's an actual military base or whether it is a recruiting center or some other facility such as that, an armory, for example, a National Guard location. Why wouldn't you allow people to protect? You can't put the military, you can't put a police officer in every one of those locations, and yet our military is a prime target for Islamic fundamentalists. We know that because ISIS has been putting phone numbers and, what about the people who are on active duty who are in danger in their own homes because ISIS is threatening them? I think all the way back to the mid-1980s, when people thought it was absolutely terrible that Colonel Oliver North put a security fence around his house out in Virginia after Osama bin Laden was threatening his life. And I fail to understand why we don't give the confidence to the people who've already received this type of training.
Yeah. So why wouldn't we allow military people, active military people with this training to protect themselves, Amitabh?
The caller actually brought up a very interesting point. There's so many aspects and facets of this that we can discuss, and perhaps a show like this, we can only go into some details. Yes, the Posse Comitatus Act, that is another sort of complication. Do you really want the army to serve as domestic law enforcement? All the questions that raises, thankfully it hasn't happened in this country and it never will. But, the moment you start giving the military sort of expanded jurisdiction, expanded rights to carry weapons, to sort of intrude into law enforcement, you are sort of, feeding into their notions of controlling larger and larger sort of portions of policy, of domestic policy. And in other countries, of course, this has led to the military eventually taking over. I'm not saying that this is necessarily going to happen in this country, but do we want to go down that path?
All right. Now we have heard from our two guests on this big question. Should the National Guard and other military members be permitted to carry weapons while on duty? Now we'll give you an opportunity to sound off on this question. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We have Ian on Facebook, who says there's something very wrong when you arm soldiers in public after serving umpteen hours in Iraq and Afghanistan. They are wired with PTSD. Dan emails, I'm a former guard member. The military already has its own security guards. They're called MPs. They use them where necessary. Pat in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Pat.
Hey, guys. So I'm trying to understand the rationale here. It is more dangerous to arm trained security people with guns so they can protect themselves than let them be sitting ducks and get killed. So to me, it makes no sense why this policy hasn't been in place for many years. I think there's a pattern here. There are all kinds of warnings on the 4th of July with Ramadan. And for us to let these people be sitting ducks, for the rationale of guns equal bad, which is, automatically the knee-jerk reaction, I don't think this is complex. It makes a lot of sense. If individual civilians can conceal and carry without any problems, which we haven't had in Wisconsin since that law's been put in place, how on earth do we think that trained officers are going to be shooting each other or shooting other people?
Thank you, Pat. Next we go to Matt in Waukesha. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. Long-time listener. I just wanted to say one of your guests a few minutes ago made the very apt statement that the primary question embedded in this entire conversation is one of safety. Safety of our National Guardsmen, safety of our reservists, safety of military personnel, and safety of civilians. I gotta say, though, I think that maybe we're all getting a little too caught up in the nature of Walker's executive order having been passed in light of an attack on a military installation. I do think that it is a knee-jerk reaction to a long-standing problem in the United States. It is notoriously easy for civilians to get a hold of weapons in this country, much more so than in other places in the world. So rather than throwing more guns into the equation, and rather than arming even trained individuals, and allowing them to carry weapons around under the auspices of protecting themselves and the public, maybe the conversation ought to focus a little more on what we could do to perhaps make it more difficult for the civilian population to acquire firearms.
All right, thank you, Max. Limited time on Sound Off. So you can continue voting on big question number one online. You can find the big question on whether or not we should arm our military personnel at WPR.org/joy. It's also linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Right now, the poll results show that 50% of you are concerned about too many weapons falling into the wrong hands or accidental discharges. 36% of you think it is the right thing to do to protect the lives of citizens and the military.